This week on Beyond Stillness, Stories After Stroke, we spotlight Aline Sheets from Corvallis, Oregon. Aline suffered her stroke in February of 2019. She shares ways she learned to surrender control while still dedicating herself to recovery. She also highlights the important roles her family members assumed in the process. Aline's story is entitled, My Only Option, Surrender. Thank you for joining us for part one, Aline Sheets' story. Hello and welcome to Beyond Stillness. Stroke offers a powerful, life-changing shift in perspective. Each colorful memory creates a parable for life's greater teachings, a compass for journeys ahead, and inspired wisdom for unique growth. This radio show, Beyond Stillness, offers an hour of pause for storytelling and reflection. Ultimately, Beyond Stillness is a welcoming environment that reveres the moment beyond stroke's paralysis. Still moments unite humanity and divinity. I'm your host, Molly Bucola. Today we welcome guest Aline Sheets, a wife and mother from Corvallis, Oregon. She enjoys cooking, crafting, reading, exercising, travel, and a deep dive into a good mini-series. You can find her exploring forest trails or entertaining small groups of friends or hosting her grandson for a sleepover. She suffered a stroke in February of 2019. Aline's story is entitled, My Only Option, Surrender. Before we begin today, we will take a moment of pause. Pause in the midst of the rush and the chaos. Pause in the midst of anxiety and stress. A moment to remember that we are not in full control. A moment to remember that we do our best. We become our best selves when we are able to work with the energy, the love, the spirit that is beyond, that weaves through our relationships, that braids our encounters, and that offers us strength in our journey. Today, we take a moment of pause to offer thanks while understanding that we are co-creators in our life. And we give thanks. Hello, Aline.
Hi, Molly.
Hello, thanks for joining us today. I'm going to hand the mic over to you to share your story.
Okie dokie. On February 16th of 2019, I was 64 years old. I was a person that exercised regularly and was in great shape, really good health. My only exception was high blood pressure. Imagine this. My husband and I were at a wedding ceremony in Sun River, Oregon. As the bride was walking down the aisle, I started feeling dizzy. It felt like I was going at warp speed. I quickly grabbed my husband's arm and he helped me sit down on the folding chair. By that time, I lost my world. I was no longer in control. A man sitting behind us helped my husband drag me out of the room. I remember watching my feet and legs and toe across the floor. I couldn't step. I had both hands clasped over my mouth because I was going to vomit. Once outside in the hallway, I noticed a man standing by the ladies' restroom. He was holding a baby. My husband laid me down on the floor in that restroom. I was vomiting quite hard. Next thing I knew, two men were talking to me. One of them told my husband he was going to call an ambulance. It turned out the man with the baby was not only a dad, but a paramedic. I couldn't believe my fortune. The other man, another guest at the wedding, was an EMT. How about that? I knew God was with me. I was admitted to the ICU at St. Charles Hospital in Bend, Oregon. It was the closest hospital, approximately 20 minutes from Sun River. I don't remember much. I was told I continued to vomit for 17 hours. 17 hours, that was a long time. It was very dark in my room. I was miserable from vomiting and my head hurt really bad. On the third day, I was transferred to the neuro floor. Again, my room was very dark and quiet. Shortly after I had arrived, I overheard the nurses looking at my chart saying I had had a stroke. I didn't know that up until then. I had a hemorrhagic stroke, which in layman's terms means bleeding in my brain. The location was across my cerebellum. The cerebellum takes care of your equilibrium, motor learning, fine movement, and posture. I was in the hospital for 6 days before they released me. I had to be able to go up steps, walk around the hospital halls, touch my nose with my index finger, and a couple of other things. I remember the physical therapist arrived in my room. The first time he asked me to sit up on the edge of my chair, I couldn't even lift my head. I remember my brain telling my body to get up, but I just couldn't do it. I had no control. The therapist looked at me and said, "I'll come back tomorrow." It was so discouraging. The next day when he arrived, my head felt like a bowling ball. He asked me to sit up. He moved my legs to the side of the bed and helped me lean forward. I had to hold my head up with my right hand. My left hand actually decided to work that day. It also helped to stabilize my head. With the help of the physical therapist and both hands, my head lifted too. On the third day, I tried to walk. I remember using a walker with a strap around my waist. The situation was so new, like an out-of-body experience. I watched my feet shuffle, even though I knew how to walk. I shuffled around the nurse's station. It was exhausting. On the fourth day, I repeated the shuffle, then they asked me to go up 3 stairs. I needed a therapist to guide me, but was asked to lift my leg and foot on my own. I could only control certain parts of my body. It was tough, frustrating, and confusing. I just didn't understand any of it. I had never been in a situation like this before. I have never even been that helpless. I was scared I was going to be this way for the rest of my life. They released me from the hospital on day 6. My husband and I embarked on a 3.5-hour drive to Corvallis, Oregon. Fortunately, we live in a single-story house, and Mike is in excellent health and retired. I was able to go home to his care rather than a rehab facility. Mike is so positive, and he constantly reminded me that it wasn't going to be this way the rest of my life. He reinforced the idea that things would improve. All I did was sleep. The room was so dark. My body must have been working very hard to heal. The first month I felt like a blob. Mike would get me up, help me walk down the hall, and engage in other rehab exercises until exhaustion, which took maybe 5 minutes. Then I'd go back to sleep. I could only do so much. My second month at home, I began physical therapy. Then I went into cognitive therapy. This all lasted for several weeks. I was training my brain to improve my reaction time. There were a lot of brain and memory games. There were fine motor skill tests like pickup sticks. The cognitive test to pass was my driver's test. I failed miserably. So we kept on working ways to improve. In order to pass my driving test using a driving simulator, I had to stay in my lane going 55 miles an hour, driving through curves. It sounds easy, but I was all over the road. It was extremely frustrating, very disappointing, and sad. My driving that day paralleled my life. I felt like I was in the driver's seat, but I also felt that I had very little control over my circumstances. I knew I couldn't drive a car. It was devastating. I wondered if I would ever regain that ability. Mike's determination, hope, and positivity was helpful, but it was still hard for me. I realized it was going to take a while to return to independence. I remember being frustrated, short-tempered, hard on myself, and sad. I felt like I was a burden. Relying on people is not one of my strengths. I remember when I finally realized I had to depend upon my supportive family and friends. It really got me down for a bit. When I began to see progress, my mood lightened. Physical therapy really made a difference. It was exhausting, hard, and maddening, but I could see the positive changes. The more I regained, the harder I worked, the more I felt in control of the small stuff. Results gave me hope. Cognitive therapy was challenging in a completely different way. The exercises revealed unseen disabilities, but there I learned failing didn't mean I was a failure. It meant I needed to be kind to myself and believe in myself. I kept telling myself that it would get better, and I did. I will never forget the day my cognitive therapist told me her job was done. I cried. I cried because I knew what I had accomplished and I knew what I could accomplish. I believe my life would return to normal as long as I pushed myself. My brave husband kept pushing me too. I remember the days he drove the car to empty parking lots. Upon arrival, we would switch seats. He would give up control of the wheel and take over. He would give directions, stop, turn right, turn left, park, back up. After practice, my reaction time enhanced. Once I was comfortable with that, I progressed to driving on a quiet country road. This process reminded me of when I taught my children how to drive. It was actually terrifying. I knew the dangers if I lost control and messed up. I just needed my brain to make driving automatic again. I desperately wanted independence, but also feared responsibility. Not only was I taking my life in my hands, but possibly others. I didn't take this lightly. I really made sure I was ready. Before I could drive comfortably, I needed to be confident in my reactions, alertness, and ability to take in multiple things at once. A lot of time, practice, and emotion went into regaining that confidence. Luckily for me, I eventually retook the driver's test and received a 99%. I was cleared to drive. That was a huge benchmark. My work finally paid off, and it motivated me to continue my path forward. In the back of my mind, I knew I didn't do it alone. Mike doesn't know the words "I can't." He is gentle, kind, supportive, and extremely annoyed. He has been my everything. He always lovingly pushed me a little bit further than I thought possible. I would tell him I would want to go outside and practice walking. Then, if I had had enough, he would insist we continued. I knew where this was headed. We have a 500-foot driveway, which seemed like 500 miles. Thanks to Mike, each day, I'd walk a little further than the last. Then one day, I accomplished it. That day, my neighbor from across the street saw me walking with my walker. He stood at his doorstep, clapping and cheering me on. More support and kindness. My neighbor across the street was a doctor, and he knew what I had gone through. That standing ovation meant a lot to me. People were so encouraging. They believed in me even when I was discouraged. It's only natural we lose faith in ourselves and encountering frustrating, sad moments after such a huge life shift. In those moments, I've learned the importance of surrounding myself with positive people who believe in me, people who lovingly support me in my dark times while also reminding me of the light ahead. My daughter, Nicole, lived 2 hours away in Portland and was in dental hygiene school at the time. She would return home most weekends. She is the kindest, most caring, and compassionate daughter. Her time and dedication to my recovery gave me such strength. My son, Matthew, also lived 80 miles away. He would return home as often as he could. He, too, gave me comfort and motivation. I have always felt Matthew as my protector. He looks at life very objectively. I could see the concern in his eyes. I could hear it in his voice. Yet, in his own unique way, he gave me strength, comfort, and encouragement. Seeing my family's apprehensions, sadness, love, and dedication made me want to try my hardest to recover. I wasn't going to let them down. I had too much to live for. I see this as part of life. It is important for us to both empathize with and believe in each other. It is important that we see each other's potential while also knowing our own. In that moment, each of us played our parts in lifting each other to be our best selves. My cousin and his wife arrived from California to help. Pat, my cousin's wife, is a doer. She goes into action without hesitation. She's a fantastic cook, organizer, planner, and loving person. She went into caring and action mode, managing the house in ways it had been neglected. Her doing includes listening. She listened to me complain and listened to my fears. She's my path. Her husband, Greg, is like the brother I never had. His mere presence gave me peace. In those moments of peace, I developed strength. My family, Mike, Nicole, Matthew, Pat, and Greg were my primary support group. They offered me strength, encouragement, and comfort in my new, very upside-down world. It was important that I let them do that for me. It was important each person was able to contribute in ways they could. Their positivity, motivation, attention, Objectism, action, and present each uniquely boasted my recovery. Their love and dedication gave me reason to try my best. One of the most difficult parts of this whole process is the reminder that we really aren't really in complete control of our lives. I do believe God has a plan. He's the one in control. There's something comforting in the surrender. I'm the worker, not the boss. God is my boss. When I look back on the day of my stroke, I see life-saving moments. I truly feel blessed. I've also learned a lot about my life through my recovery. I see glimpses of God's plan. I am more thankful, more grateful, more aware, more kind. I don't fret over the small things as much. It is clear to me that we are all here as workers, generously offering our talents to each other, and God is in control of the rest.
Wow. Oh, Aline, thank you.
You're welcome, Molly. Thank you.
In closing, we take a moment of pause. Today, Aline named a few family members that were by her side, that pushed her just enough, that supported and listened. Each of us have those people in our lives. People who nudged us a little further in our therapy exercises, or suggest that we look on the bright side, or notice how far we've come, or reminded us to simply believe. Today, we call to mind those people, and we give thanks. We give thanks that they saw our potential. They saw our yearning, our pain, and encouraged us to be our best selves. And now we ask that we are able to do that for others, to show up, to listen, to nudge, encourage, and believe. Today, we give thanks and ask for courage. Thank you for devoting time and space to listen to Part 1, Aline Sheet's story. Stick with us for Part 2, Aline Sheet's interview. Each colorful memory creates a parable for life's greater teachings, a compass for journeys ahead, and inspired wisdom for unique growth. In this episode of Beyond Stillness, guest Aline Sheets from Corvallis, Oregon, shared ways she learned to surrender control while still dedicating herself to recovery. Aline also highlights the important roles her family members assumed in the process. Aline's story is entitled, My Only Option, Surrender. If you enjoyed this moment of pause for storytelling and reflection, please like, share, or subscribe to the Beyond Stillness Stories After Stroke podcast. Again, thanks for listening. And remember, as part of the stroke community, you are more than supportive. You are inspirational.
If you are part of the stroke community and have a story you'd like to share on the show, please contact us. Email molly@beyondstillness.org.